Now, the lawyer who defended Stephen Avery in the hugely successful Making a Murderer series is in Belfast this weekend, and I'm delighted that he's able to join me now. Jerry Buting, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Jerry, I have Naomi from the newsroom, who is a self-confessed super fan of the series and the show, and as are loads and loads of listeners. I've got some questions for you from some listeners. Carmel, who works at Titanic Creative, says, I'd really like to know how you detach yourself emotionally from cases such as Stephen Avery's.
Well, that's an excellent question, and it's some cases are more difficult than others. I must say that this case was more difficult than others I've ever had to detach. It took me probably at least 2 months where I really couldn't focus on the rest of my practice that much. And, you know, I was very disappointed to lose. It was a very difficult case, we knew going in, but by the time we had, you know, finished the case, we thought that there was reasonable doubt and were very disappointed in the jury verdict. But you can't lose faith as a criminal defense attorney. You will lose more often than you win, because if the cases are that weak, the prosecutor will dismiss it before trial or will reduce it, and the cases won't go to trial. So you do have to be able to detach enough to be able to move on with your practice and really just double down on and persevere in the next cases to try and ensure that justice is done.
Great. Naomi, you've got a question.
I guess the one thing that probably everybody wants to know, I mean, nobody knows what happened that day with Teresa Halbach. Do you think Stephen and Brendan, of course, are innocent?
Everybody wants to ask me that question. And, you know, all I can say is I wasn't there, and, you know, nobody but God and Stephen Avery can really answer that with certainty. But I can say that from my experience as a criminal defense attorney for almost 35 years, I have no doubt that there's an abundance of reasonable doubt, and that causes me to believe that he really is innocent and wrongly convicted again. Everything from the lack of a motive, you know, he was getting a $400,000 tax-free payment from the state the very next day. And, you know, to the suspicious nature of evidence, you know, a key that magically appears on the seventh search of the bedroom, and
it's the magic key.
The magic key and the magic bullets, you know, and the lack of any of her DNA or blood anywhere in his trailer. You know, I can understand why people are troubled and there's serious concerns about whether or not there's another miscarriage of justice here.
And what would it take? What would it take, Jerry, for Stephen to get a new trial?
Well, you know, in America and frankly a lot of places, the appellate system is skewed against people trying to get a new trial. The interests of finality of judgments trumps everything. And so the tests that you have to overcome in order to get a new trial are difficult in America. The most likely, though, is newly discovered evidence. Dean and I received a number of tips directly once the documentary came out. And you know, we forwarded those on to his new attorney, and I'm not privy to what other tips she might have received on her own directly, nor am I privy to her strategy and, you know, the kinds of things that she's going to do to get a new trial. But I'm optimistic that now that the public is looking at this carefully and that people have come forward with new information, I'm optimistic that his conviction will be reversed and that he will get a new trial.
There have been so many people who have basically turned amateur sleuths and have been dissecting every single piece of the documentary. And I think one of the big things that came out was this picture that came out of Teresa Halbach holding her car keys. And it showed this big, massive bunch. But the key that was found, the magic key that amazingly disappeared after, well, like three searches in Stephen Avery's bedroom, was a single key. And there's so many of these new bits of evidence that's come out. Do you think those amateur sleuths are a help or a hindrance?
You know, it's an interesting phenomena. A lot of people are sort of critical about the armchair sleuths who are trying to, take a look at this case from anew without any kind of even sometimes legal training or law enforcement training. But, you know, on balance, I think it's been helpful. I think that, you know, they say two minds are better than one. Well, if that's the case, probably a million minds are better than two.
Some of the theories out there are pretty crazy, though, as to what happened. I mean, have you seen them? Have you read them? What do you make of them?
I have seen some of the theories, and some of them are far-fetched. Others are not so far-fetched. And some of them we did consider, and we wanted to present theories about a third-party suspect, someone other than Mr. Avery. Mm. And the court did not allow us to do that, and I think that was one of the most unfair rulings in the case. And so, some of what people see in the documentary or see in the transcripts is not all that we tried to do. There are other things we did try to do that the court prevented us from doing. So, but some of the theories are potentially very valid, and I don't discourage people from. The only thing I would hesitate in saying is that, you know, one of the problems that we had in this case was that the media made snap judgments and prejudged the case based upon a misleading and you know, downright false press conference about, you know, Brendan Dassey's so-called confession. And, you know, people have to be careful not to make snap judgments in this case on Reddit or online and make the conclusion that this person or that person must be the killer because of this, that, or the other thing. So, but as far as, you know, examining the evidence, I encourage people to do as much of that as they want.
And Jerry, so many people getting in touch. Janice says, I found the show fascinating, felt so strongly one way and then the other. And actually, Siobhan has a confession. Siobhan Edgar, Siobhan says, Siobhan, need to hear this interview with Jerry. I kind of have developed a wee bit of a crush on him. how are you dealing with this newfound celebrity status?
Well, I have to say that the internet heartthrob phenomena was the least anticipated outcome. My wife says that she's known that all along, but she's, of course, biased. So, you know, that's been interesting, and I don't really know what to attribute that to. But it's, you know, I find it humorous, and there are people that follow me on Twitter who are big followers, and they make me laugh a lot with some of the memes and things that they've created. So I kind of take
that. Yeah, funny, David McCammon, too, is up in programming here as well. He said, ask you about that. What do you think of those?
The memes?
Yeah.
You know, they like I said, they're funny, they're creative. I'm amazed at how much time people have, or maybe they're just very good at doing them quickly. But they are very, very creative and some of them very funny. And, you know, I come home from a hard day at work and kind of try and go through things as quickly as I can. And I get a good laugh out of some of them. So that lightens my day.
And Rachel Morton, Rachel has been in touch as well. She says, this is amazing, Siobhan. My boyfriend and I are massive fans of the show. I'd love if you could ask Jerry if he felt as though he and Dean Strang were treated differently by the courts or anyone else in law enforcement because of their decision to take on Stephen as a client. And also, how frustrating was it for you knowing Stephen? She says, knowing Stephen is innocent and knowing how much research and work you and Dean put into getting him released, only to have what she calls an unfair verdict in the end.
Okay, well, as far as law enforcement, you know, certainly while the case was pending, we were as recognizable on the street then as we are now, at least in Wisconsin. But, you know, the stares we got were all negative. You know, even in church, when we went to church at one point, we're coming down the aisle and I'm seeing people shooting dagger stares at us. It's like, you know, oh, come on now, you know. But, you know, what I've found in my career, this is not the only case where I've had to take on law enforcement and challenge prosecutorial misconduct and things of that nature. And what I've found generally is that, you know, people respect what I do. They realize that I'm going to persevere and challenge and fight for justice no matter what side and no matter who may, you know, may be involved, whether it's law enforcement or just other witnesses that we think are not telling the truth. So that's part of the job. You know, you're not in it as a criminal defense attorney as a popularity contest. You know, you're there defending people who sometimes are accused of the most heinous things, and that's where you want to be if you're a good criminal defense attorney, because that person needs a good lawyer standing up next to them as much as the next person.
And one final question from both Naomi and for Mary Denny as well. I know that Naomi wanted to ask you something about the vial of blood as well, but Mary says, have watched all the episodes. I want to ask if a test has been carried out to see if EDT is present in the vial of Stephen's blood.
I can't comment on what his new attorneys are doing. I know that there have been over 100 scientists emailed me from all over the world when the documentary first came out with ideas that may or may not prove to be viable in this case, either, new tests or ways you could look for EDTA in not just the vial, but in the stains that were found in the RAV4, or completely different types of blood tests that might be of use. But I don't know whether those tests have been applied in a forensic setting, whether they would be reliable and admissible in court. I'm optimistic that science may help at least answer that part of the case, but I don't know exactly.
I think what everybody wants to know as well, Jerry, will you and Dean, the beautiful couple, be back in Making a Murderer 2?
Well, I don't know if there will be a Making a Murderer 2. I don't have any inside information on that. I know the filmmakers say that if there's any new developments, they'll certainly follow them. I'm sure Netflix would be interested if there was enough material for a Making a Murderer 2. And I don't know whether we would be the subject of it. It could be his new attorneys, more likely, frankly.
And Jerry, just before you go, we really should ask you why you're in Belfast today.
I am in Belfast to speak to the European Young Bar Association, which is being put on by the Northern Ireland Young Solicitors Association. So it's a gathering of younger attorneys in all walks of the law, from civil, commercial, to criminal as well. And, that's where our future lies. And so I'm happy to speak any chance I get to the young lawyers. They're the ones who are going to have to try and follow in my footsteps and others to ensure that justice is done in this country and all of Europe.
Fascinating insight. And Jerry, thanks ever so much for joining us on Daytime. I actually think we could do a whole 2-hour show with you. Or Naomi could just take you aside and do a whole 2-hour show with you. But thanks ever so much for joining us on Daytime. Jerry Buting there, the lawyer who defended Stephen Avery in Making a Murderer. 9181 5050 is the number to call, 63103 on the text.